This is Time Signatures with Jim Irvin, a podcast and radio program presented by the Capital Area Blues Society in Lansing, Michigan. Most any contemporary musical style can trace its roots back to the blues. Time Signatures explores the blues and its musical connections with captivating interviews, lively discussions, and news from the world of the blues.
You know I'm crying, crying, baby, driving up and down these Michigan roads, yeah.
And now, here he is, your host, Jim Irvin.
Well, thank you so much, Parker, and welcome to Time Signatures. I'm your host, Jim Irvin. And I'm pleased to welcome a gentleman today who has his feet firmly planted in two, not one, but two areas of music. In fact, if you go to his website right now, you'll find two distinct entrances, one for his blues work and one for gospel. In 2014, he won the International Blues Challenge Band category, as well as the Albert King Guitar Award. In 2014, he also won the Just Blues Foundation's Bobby Rush Entertainers Award and the 2015 Jackson Music Awards Blues Artist of the Year. And in 2024, our guest won a Grammy, and he has also been nominated twice for a Grammy. Lots more to talk about, but it's time to welcome this gentleman and get the stories flowing. Malico recording artist Castro Coleman, or in some circles, he's better known as Mr. Sip. It's my pleasure to welcome you to Time Signatures. How are you?
All is well. I'm just grateful. I'm grateful to be here.
I greatly appreciate your time because I know you're a busy man. I'm excited to get into the questions here. This interview, at least for me, feels like there might be a bit more fun involved because we have such a wide area of topics that we can hit along the way. I have to start back at the beginning. Talk about your earliest memories of music.
My earliest memories of music, I started playing guitar when I was 6 years old. I come from a very musical family, everybody pretty much in my family. Still today, either play, sing, or write. I tell people I'm the only one that was crazy enough to do it for a profession. So 6 years old, started playing in the local churches by the age of 9. I was on stages by the age of 11. I was touring, doing gospel music, and I'm just grateful for that background because that's the roots for me. That's the roots of what I'm doing today. And it taught me so much how to handle myself as an entertainer, as a performer, and what I'm doing currently. You know, so music is the lifesaver for me and a lot of more of my family members. So,
yes, sir. Now, as you got deeper involved in the music during those grown up years, you spent a lot of time in the churches doing the gospel, didn't you?
I did. I'm 26 years. I did professional gospel music, and I traveled pretty intensely around the United States and overseas as well.
Okay. Now, as you said, 26 years in gospel music, seemingly at the top of your game, but then you decided to make a move towards the blues. Now, did you encounter any pushback from family? And how about your fan base?
This was the strangest thing. I didn't really receive any pushback. This is what I did from an early age in music. Although I was playing gospel music, I never marketed myself or made myself appear as the quote-unquote church boy. You know, I was an artist, and that was my thing, you know, from a kid. I want to be an artist. I don't want to just be a church musician or a blues musician. I want to be an artist. So what I did coming up in the church, I went against the grain of everything. You know, I remember 17 years old, I had 15 inches of hair, you know, playing in the church, you know, dreads. You know, they didn't expect nothing less from me. It was like always what he's going to do next, what he's going to do next. So at an early age, I kind of trained my fan base to just love the music and the energy that I bring. Whenever I bring it, however I bring it. So when I switched over to blues, my entire fan base followed me.
Wow.
Immediately. This was a funny thing. I never thought in a million years I would be doing, you know, secular music, blues, anything. But I was often getting booked for sessions and to write songs, you know, that had that Mississippi bluesy feel, you know,
for gospel,
you know. So I think it was just something that was already planted in me. And when I made the switch, it just was a perfect fit for me to do so. And And they followed me. My fan base followed me. My family supported me. I never would forget the church that I was playing for at that time. Literally doing service, called me up front, you know, to pray and cover me as I go, what they call out
wow.
to the world. You know, so
yeah.
that was big for me, because that ultimately showed me that my community, my church, my family really loved and supported me as an artist, and not, you know, a church musician or a gospel singer, a gospel producer. You know, they respected me and my craft, and that still gives me ammunition to go even harder in the blues world now, to bring joy, happiness, and keep
yes.
spreading the good news just in front of a different audience, you know. So
there you go.
It's a wonderful thing. It's a wonderful thing.
Yes, sir. Now, when you started down the pathway toward the blues, there were some concerns about the name,
yes.
according to what I was reading. And as a result, the birth of a new name evolved, didn't it?
Yes. So basically, when I went to the record company and let them know that I wanted to do blues, they was concerned about the fan base and, you know, the 26-year history that we had, you know, in the recording industry.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, you know, I don't think we should go in as Castro Coleman, because this is something a lot of people don't know. My first 3 months as a blues guy, I was Castro Coleman and Kinfolk. The band was called Kinfolk, you know,
okay.
and I was going by my name. And I was, you know, and the record company really stressed that, I don't know if you want to do that. And I was edging up to try, because I love my name, Castro. But we birthed the name Mr. Sip, the Mississippi Blues Child. Mr. Sip is short for Mr. Mississippi. I love Mississippi. I've been here all my life, you know, and when that time for me to leave here, you know, I hope I leave out of Mississippi. You know what I mean? So
yes, sir.
Mississippi has been great to me, for me, you know, so I wanted to represent the name going further, you know, and forward in my career. The Mississippi Blues Child, a lot of the Mississippi blues greats come from Mississippi, you know, a lot of the blues greats come from Mississippi.
Sure.
Even though you know, some of them migrated to Chicago and other places, but their home base, the mud that's up under their feet, come from Mississippi. So
right.
60 years later, you know, here I come, the blues child of these greats, the B.B. Kings, Muddy Waters, Robert Johnson, those powerhouses in the blues world. Years later, here come the child, the blues child of these guys, because they influenced me with their sounds and their abilities, and, you know, the way they approached their music, you know, was fire.
Yes, sir.
It was fire, you know, up under my feet to get going and make this happen and help try to carry this Mississippi legacy on.
Yes, yes. Well, Coleman, 2014 was an incredibly big year for you, beginning with the IBC, your big double win. But that was not your first time in the finals. Talk about that for a minute.
Okay, so to backtrack a little bit, 2010, I came off the road as a gospel singer. I sat home for 2 years. I produced records and stuff like that, played for the churches, and got bored. So I decided I wanted to come back as a blues man. Found this competition. I Googled blues opportunity in Mississippi, and
okay.
found this competition that they was having in Vicksburg, a regional competition. This was like November of 2012. And, you know, I reached out to Miss Shirley Warren, and I said, I want to join this competition. She was like, well, it's too late. I was like, please, I really need this. She was like, do you have a band? I said, I will by tomorrow. She said, do you have some songs? I said, I will by Saturday. I think that was on a Monday. And she was like, I don't know about that. I was like, please, I need this. So she allowed me to do it. My daughter sent in the $25 for registration. Granted, I'm a professional gospel artist that had toured the world with records and awards. Now I'm going to do a talent show, a competition, you know, in a whole nother genre. So I was confident that I could put a band together. And the first thing I did was call my family members. You know, through my family members, and say, hey, y'all want to do this contest Saturday? It was like, yeah, we're Vicksburg. It was like, what are we doing? I said, some blues. They were like, you got some songs? I said, I will go as soon as y'all can come over for rehearsal. And I wrote three songs. We won the regional in November 2012. That led us to go to the IBC 2013. So I had four songs going into Memphis. Had no clue
wow.
of what I was getting into. I didn't even plan to make it out of the quarterfinals. You know, that was in my head. I just wanted to go and let them know that, hey, I'm a new blues kid coming on the scene, and, you know, and this is what we're about to do. And basically, man, we made it to the finals, all the way to the finals. And when we didn't win, when they called the winner, you know, everybody booed, and I was clapping for the winner because I thought he was amazing. I still think he's amazing. You know, I was so freaking happy for this guy, man, because, you know, like, you know, he did a great job. I feel like I did a great job too, but it was like, man, I had told the guys, we'll be back in Macomb. You know, I think the quarterfinals started on the Wednesday. I said, we'll be back in Macomb by Thursday. You know, that was my take. And we ended up staying in Memphis to Saturday. You know, so man, I made it to the finals in 2013, you know, and 2014, you know, all the leaders and of the organization was like, if you come back next year, I believe you'll win it. And I was like, well, for me, it wasn't about winning. I just wanted the Blues community to know that there was a new kid in town, and it was me. You know, fortunately, we came back 2014, and it was a struggle getting back because at that particular time, we was filming for the James Brown movie, and some of my scenes was actually on the weekend of the finals. You know,
wow.
Actually, you know, I don't know how it happened because it generally don't happen like that in Hollywood. But I talked to the, you know, the producer and stuff, and just told him what I was doing. You know, acting wasn't going to be my long time career, but Blues could be, and they actually bumped up my filming dates a few days ahead, and then actually I ended up changing roles. So I became James Brown first guitar player, which worked out perfect because all of my stuff was shot 2 weeks before the IBC happened. So man, like we landed a nice placement in the movie, then come back and won the IBC in 2014. And man, everything has just, you know, everything has been lovely. I'm able to just reach out, meet new people, give them my version of the Blues. Sometimes when you think about the Blues, you think about sad and, you know, depressed. No, my Blues, we're happy, we're fun, we're dancing, we're partying, we're having a good time, and we're dancing all the troubles away. We're walking out of sorrow into joy. And that's just like, that's like my motto. My son tours with me now. And the first thing he said, Pops, you think we can get him up? You know, you think we can get him up? You know, that's the thing. And I'm like, man, I'm confident in 35 seconds, we'll have him dancing. And it hadn't failed us yet, man. It hadn't failed us yet.
That's great. A 2019 article about you stated that you, at the time, had elevated the commingling of gospel and blues another notch in a long and often painful marriage hampered by the 19th and early 20th century perception that the blues is all about evil and gospel is all about the goodness. It goes on to mention that Son House and the Reverend Gary Davis were godly men who sang the blues in the first half of the 20th century. And there's more. But Mr. Sipp, where are you in this process now? And how do you feel that the commingling has gone? And how do you see it continuing?
It has truly been successful for me, truly a blessing for me. I often tell people, the people that I know that successfully did it was Reverend Al Green, Sam Cooke, Aretha Franklin, you know, and it's a few more, but to be recognized with such powerhouse talents in doing such, I have successfully mingled both of them together. And it's funny now when I go to church, they call me Mr. Sid, you know, and when I come to a blues festival, they ask me to sing a gospel song. So it's like, wow, that's what I wanted to do. And by no means did I come over into the secular world. I feel like I was placed here to be a light because I'm still a godly man. I try to live the cleanest life that I can. You know, I run a clean camp. My guys are, you know, level-headed and clean. I don't knock anything, but I do want to be the light to the ones that don't. And I found myself at festivals, you know, the other bands, you know, they respect me. You know, if they're drinking, you know, don't drink around Sip. You know, some of them call me Pastor Sip. You know, and I'm letting them know it's okay. I appreciate the respect, but you know, you don't have to cut your phone out. But I appreciate them really respecting me in that manner.
Yes, sir.
And I think that's divine to be chosen, you know, to be a light throughout the world, and I'm grateful for that. Now that comes with a lot of heartache and pain. Meaning, you know, don't mean to be so spiritual, but the enemy attacks you more when you are a light. You know what I mean? So my way has been much harder than most other artists, you know, because I just choose not to indulge into anything that would be harmful to my body, my career, my family, my brand, you know, my reputation, the record
Yes,
company's
sir.
reputation, the booking agency reputation. Like, it's not just me. I represent a lot of people up under this umbrella of music. And, you know, I just want to do my part. And so the enemy fights me sometime on that, meaning, you know, because I don't hang out late, you know, it sometimes seems that I don't mingle as much. And I do, it's just when it's time for me to go, it's time for me to go. When it feels a little weird, it's just time for me to go, you know.
Now, the same article mentioned a club that you opened in Magnolia, Mississippi. Is the club still in existence? And are you still finding joy in showing folks that don't appreciate the blues that it really can be enjoyable? Is that still the gravy for you?
That's still the gravy for me. The club is not open. 2020 had lined it up to be like my biggest tour year of my life. So I had my daughters working, running the club for me. So basically what I was, the plan was I was going to bring my daughters out and let them run the music side of me, you know, because literally that tour schedule was the biggest tour schedule that I ever seen as a musician in my life. So I needed all of my hands that I could really trust to be on board. So
Sure.
we basically had planned to close the club in 2020 anyway. And when the pandemic came, it just all made sense, you know, for closing the club. And I think my daughters did 3 trips with me before touring stopped. But I saw all of these cool places, you know, around the world, and I wanted my hometown to experience that. So I put the necessary time, the necessary money and effort into downtown Magnolia. And we ran a successful business, you know, until we closed.
Wow, that's really cool. And a lot of businesses can't say that. A lot of businesses suffered greatly because of the COVID pandemic, but it seems like the timing was just right for you at that moment. But Castor, I wanted to ask you, how do you feel the music world has evolved as a result of the pandemic? Has it do you are you finding that people are still hesitant to come out? Or are they more willing to come out now? What are you seeing down there?
I'm seeing people are willing to come out. Things has changed. One thing that kind of hurt me, and I never spoke out about it, so this would be the first time that I'm speaking about this issue, but when the pandemic came, musicians suffered more than probably any industry, I'm thinking, because our tours, our jobs, our venues, everything was shut completely down.
Yes, sir.
And then to come out of the pandemic, to come back into the music industry, and, you know, the pay is less, the opportunities are stricter. You know, it's like as musicians, we always losing. We bring the joy, we bring the power, we bring the energy, we bring the people, but we're the last to be embraced. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And
yep.
That bothers me a lot. And even, you know, now with the whole digital world, I remember, and I was telling my son this last week, I remember when I could spend, I'm just going to use the number, $20,000 to produce a record and put a record out. And then I could make that $20,000 back in a month, you know, selling physical CDs and, you know, well, I go further back, selling physical tapes and VCR, you know, VCR tapes, you know, to now, you know, it costs more to get in the studio. It costs more to get producers. It costs more to get features. It costs more. And this whole streaming world, like, you never recoup that money, especially if you're an artist like myself. I'm an artist on Malico, but I pay for my records. You know, I pay for my albums, you know, out of the household. So
sure.
I never see that money back. Like,
wow.
So that's kind of hard. But then the joy for me is knowing that, you know, Sheila, Mary, Becky, Susie, Don, you know, Jimmy, is really enjoying my music. So I had to take my mind off of recouping money and look at the prize of we're bringing joy. We're healing lives. We're saving lives. You know, we're motivating people. We're uplifting people. And I think you can't put a price on that.
Yes, sir. Well, it looks like you've got a busy year ahead. Any new music on the horizon for Mr. Sip or for Castro?
I finished an album. I don't really even know what you want to call it. That's why I'm hesitant on releasing it because it's just good music. And I told the record company after the last record, I kind of, in this last season of my life, not meaning I'm fit to die, but I've just done this for a long time and I'm ready to chill out and hang out with the grandkids. But in this last season of my life, and this season can be 10 years, 15 years, I don't know, but I just want to do good music, you know, good lyrics, good melodies. And I'm not worried about trying to place it to be the number one blues album. I'll place it to be a Grammy Award winning, you know, soul album. I just want, so many people need good music. They're hurting for good music. And I want to be the guy. Once again, I guess in this season, I'm taking my mind off of money. I'm taking my mind off of any accolades or fame. I just want to be a good guy releasing good music. And whatever that does, I'll be satisfied. Unfortunately, with the record company, we have to have a direction. And I
Sure,
understand that.
sure. Yeah.
I totally understand that. So I've completed an album with some great songs on it. It's in between soul and I don't know what else is in between, soul, gospel, something. All I know is the lyrics are great. We have a set of listeners that we send stuff out to. Everybody's going crazy about it. We just don't know how to place it. I wouldn't know what radio station to send it to. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
So we released one single from that album entitled In Love With You. Like everyone went crazy about that song. It's just, I don't, it's not R&B. It's not blues. It's not, we have no stations to target to send it to. You know what I mean? So I understand the label of not knowing how to put it out. So I'm thinking maybe in a month or so I'll go and cut some kind of record, whether it be blues, gospel, or something. I'm full of songs, I know that. It's just
Okay.
how I want to project it out.
Maybe something that's a little mix of both would be nice. Yeah.
And that was a conversation actually this morning between Tommy Couch Jr. and myself over at Malico Records, you know.
Okay.
So most definitely something will come out. I know I will drop those songs as singles, that album. We're just going to digitally release them, you know, and whoever gets them. Kind of a, for me, it's a giveaway album. I put the time in it. Great songs. And who knows, this year, next year, maybe 10 years from today, you know, it would happen. But I think I'm going to go in. It's time for me to do another traditional blues album. It is.
Okay.
My very first blues album was a traditional blues album. So I think it's time for me to spin that wheel and go back and give them a good Mississippi down home, you know, guitar screaming, you know, soulful singing traditional blues album. That's the ticket.
Mr. Sip, where can folks go to find out more about you, your music, maybe buy some merch, some CDs, catch your latest touring information, or book you for a gig?
They can go to my website. That's www.mrsip.net. That's mrsip.net. You can follow me on Facebook, Mr. Sip, the Mississippi Blues Child. You can even go join the fan page, the official fan house is what it's called, Mr. Sip Official Fan House.
Okay.
On my website, there's a merch store. Everything you need to know about me is there. You can even check out some of my gospel stuff, like you said earlier. When you get to
Sure.
the home page, you'll have a choice to go to Castro Coleman and the True Believers or Mr. Sip. And I am the same person. It's different music, but serving the same purpose, and that's bringing joy.
Very good. Castro Coleman, Mr. Sip, whatever you want to call him. Thank you so much for your time today on Time Signatures. I'm really glad to have you here, and much continued success and safe travels to you, sir.
Thank you so much for having me.
And that wraps up this edition of Time Signatures. Once again, my appreciation and thanks to Castro, Mr. Sip Coleman, but also to you, for without you, none of this would be possible. Jim Irvin reminding you, keeping the blues alive is everyone's responsibility, but preserving the history of the blues, one story at a time, is my mission. Until next time, so long, everybody.
This has been Time Signatures with Jim Irvin, presented by the Capital Area Blues Society in Lansing, Michigan. For more information on cabs, visit capitalareablues.org. You can find this episode and past episodes at lccconnect.org. The Time Signatures theme song, Michigan Roads, is used by permission and was written by Root Doctor, featuring Freddie Cunningham.
You know I'm crying, crying, baby, driving up in
Until next time, keep on keeping the blues alive.